It's often pointed out that chimps and humans have almost 98% of their DNA in common, and although that similarity has inspired a number of experiments, the extended language acquisition studies that took place in the 1970s and 80s may have been the most remarkable of all. Nim Chimpsky, Elizabeth Hess's new book, tells the story of a monkey reared as a human child, and where else could that have happened but on the Upper West Side of Manhattan? The book is published by Bantam Books and brings Elizabeth Hess to the show. Hello.
Hi.
When was the extent of the similarity between chimps and humans discovered?
A good 10 years post Project Nim and Nim Chimpsky. And certainly the meaning of that similarity is still being hotly debated.
But despite what Mike Huckabee says, it's likely that we share a common ancestor with chimpanzees?
It is indeed.
Chimps have been born into captivity for a long time.
Yes, they have. They really they began to be seriously bred here in the 60s, and late in the 70s it became illegal actually to trap them and bring them over from Africa. So researchers began seriously breeding them here.
How much like human babies are newborn chimps?
Shockingly like human babies. Totally adorable. They require the same things that human babies require. Bottles, attention, play, love. They really, especially for the first few months, are very similar to humans.
So was there any concern expressed that the closeness in genetics could be a reason to preclude us from experimenting on chimps?
Well, that's the question. I think certainly in the 70s it was the reason for experimenting on chimps, the fact that they were so human, the fact that we knew already by the 1973 when Nim was born that they took to American Sign Language. They're very gestural and they're bright. They like learning new ways to communicate. So Project Nim was really going a step further by raising the chimp from birth in a human family so the chimp might really believe on some level that it was human.
What had been done before? There was Robert Mearns Yerkes, who is the founder of Chimp Studies, and he was at Harvard, wasn't he? And then he couldn't convince Harvard to support his studies.
So he moved to Yale.
And that's because they were afraid of religious concerns?
Yes, and I think, Darwinism was still very controversial, and chimps were very controversial, and having them around is extremely difficult.
Now, naming this chimp Nim, obviously a play on the name Noam Chomsky, was that because the experiments with him were an attempt to test Chomsky's language theory?
Well, yes. Herbert Terrace, who's the author of Project Nim, was B.F. Skinner's protege. And Skinner had had a longstanding argument with Chomsky over whether or not one could draw the line between humans and animals at language. Chomsky, of course, said that language was inherent to humans exclusively, and Skinner, to put it in a nutshell, argued that language was cultural and could be taught even to a chimpanzee.
But there was another key figure in this whole thing, the director and founder of the Institute for Primate Studies, Dr. William Lemmon. He was at the University of Oklahoma. And he's a Freudian. He's not a Skinnerist. A Skinnerian.
Yes, Lemmon really had nothing to do with Project Nim apart from supplying the chimps. But he...
Well, didn't he dream of colonies of chimps being raised in human families?
He not only dreamed of it, but he placed 20 or so chimps in human families. And his cross-foster, he called it a cross-foster study, and he had a control group in his lab of chimps that were raised by their natural mothers, and he compared the data with chimps that were in human families. And this is why he was eager to give Nim to Herbert Terrace in New York.
Now, a chimp named Washoe, many people will recognize that name, had already been taught sign language. What did the experiment with Nim hope to achieve?
Well, Washoe was the first chimp to use American Sign Language successfully. So it was generally accepted at that point that chimps could learn a chimp version of ASL. What Herbert Terrace hoped to prove with Nim...
And he's at Columbia, Herbert
And
Terrace.
He's still at Columbia, was that he was looking instead at how chimps use American Sign Language, whether or not they could combine words, string them together to express thoughts, ideas about the past and the future. It was really about how the chimps were using language and if that use was similar to the way we use language.
But isn't it dangerous to live with a chimp? Isn't their behavior rather unpredictable?
Chimps are wild animals, and the truth is no one in New York had really much experience with chimps at all.
This sounds like a perfect sitcom premise. here we are on the Upper West Side, and we have a chimp growing up in the family.
Yes, and ABC actually offered the Lafarge, or talked briefly with the Lafarge family who had Nim, about doing a sitcom, and they used to call themselves the Brady Bunch plus Chimp.
Were they atypical, or were there a lot of people who wanted to bring up these chimps?
There was sort of a trend to raise a chimp as a pet, but I don't think there were a lot of people, and certainly anybody who knew what it was going to be like wouldn't want to do it. I think that the Lafarges felt it was an honor. This was a very exciting science experiment, and it was a very revolutionary one on many levels. So they felt honored to be selected to actually raise the chimp.
But this was something of a wild household before Nim arrived. She was divorced, and her new husband was divorced, and they had a bunch of kids of their own. I'd assume there was a difficult adjustment on both sides, the chimps and the Lafarges.
Yes, it was. I mean, in some ways, I think the idea was that this was a, quote, normal family, but we all know there are no normal families. This was indeed a blended family. Stephanie had three children from her first marriage. Weir Lafarge, a poet and playwright, had four children from his first marriage. So there were seven kids, a German shepherd, and a chimpanzee.
How old was Nim when he joined the family?
Stephanie flew to Oklahoma to get him, and she took him from his mother at 10 days old.
Was he any more or less aggressive than other baby chimps have been under similar circumstances?
That's hard to say, and certainly I'm not an expert on this, but I would say no. You isolate any animal from its species, and you put it in a strange context. Chimps bite, and they bite not because they're vicious, but because they can, and because they have learned that it gets an amazing response from people.
And Nim bit as well.
And Nim bit as
well. He did not become a little human, a hairy little human. We're talking with Elizabeth Hess about Nim Chimpsky, the chimp who would be human, published by Bantam. So how was he taught sign language? Did the family sign well?
Well, the family was sort of one step ahead of him. They went and they took an ASL class, and they would all go to meetings and decide on what word would be next. Drink was the first word that Nim learned, which was obvious because he had to sign drink to ask for his bottle, which he was eager for. So he learned it very quickly. And they started his training when he was just a few months old. And he was very bright, very eager to learn. I mean, it's attention. And there are even still some zoo programs today that teach their chimps ASL because they enjoy it.
Well, children absorb language. They aren't taught it word by word. Did the same thing happen here?
I think it did happen here. And Stephanie Lafarge always used to say that Nim was trilingual, that he had English, he had some ASL, and, of course, he hooted a lot. The question of how... I mean, this was the problem. How do you teach a chimp ASL? Do you sit the chimp down at a desk and drill him in language, which was Terrace's idea? Or do you create an environment that's rich in language and just expect the chimp to absorb it?
So everybody communicated through sign language, and he was part of the family.
Yes.
None of them was a primatologist. Was that an advantage, do you think, in terms of the study, or could that have been a flaw?
Well, I think it was, I think it was a disadvantage. Primatologists understand chimps a lot better than most people do. But I think, if they had really, what they should have done is put Nim probably in a deaf family, and he probably would have learned more ASL. But, it's easy to say all of this in hindsight. At the time, just taking the chimp out of the cage and putting him in a human family was a very radical idea.
And how did Professor Terrace control the experiment? Was he involved in the chimp's daily life?
Well, I think he thought it would be much easier I think he assumed if he could integrate Nim into the family, he could integrate himself. And I think that was much more difficult than he expected. He wasn't so welcome into the apartment by Nim or any other of the kids.
And you say that when Nim was put in a classroom to learn sign language, he could hear the rats from the psychology lab next door. And he liberated them.
He did. One afternoon, he escaped and opened all the cage doors.
He also developed, he fell in love, didn't he?
He did. Later on in his life, he always, people say that he preferred humans to chimps, other chimps, for his entire life. But at one point, when he eventually got to a sanctuary in Texas, he was given a companion of a circus chimp named Sally, who was a little petite and very gentle and beguiling and older than Nim. And they were tremendous companions.
I was talking about Joyce Butler.
Oh, his second human mom.
Well, anyway, he wound up becoming famous. He went on the David Susskind show, and he acted well. He could have bitten David Susskind and caused a real problem. Callers have suggested that small children also bite, but they stop, and the chimps continue, and the chimps can really hurt. Chimps are much stronger than humans as well, and they have no sense of just how strong they are.
Well, no. I mean, Nim certainly, I can't really generalize, but Nim certainly, I think Nim really identified with humans, and when given a pile of photographs of chimpanzees and humans and asked to sort them, he put his own picture in with the humans. So I don't think at that point, at least, he believed he was that different from them.
Why did the Lafarges decide to give him up?
Well, he was wrecking the family. Weir Lafarge lost his wife to Nim, essentially. Chimps cling to their mothers for their first 4 years. Stephanie was never without Nim. And it's not that much fun living with a chimp. It's a lot of hard work. The children were often upset. You can't really bring a friend home from school. It was also tremendously exciting, but it was rough. And the experiment, Stephanie felt she was losing control over the experiment. She didn't like the direction it was going in.
But a chimp does. If a chimp is abandoned in the wild, it really has a lot of problems. I would imagine Nim had a lot of problems when suddenly he lost his family.
He did, and he had a huge separation anxiety for most of his life. And this is the lesson that he learned about humans: is that they give you up time and time again.
So what happened? He went and joined another group.
Well, when Terrace decided to end Project Nim, Nim was returned to Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and everybody basically forgot about him or tried to forget about him. It was a very wrenching experience for Nim to leave New York. The graduate students who were caring for him wanted him to stay. Terrace said he had enough data and essentially didn't need the chimp anymore. So he was returned to Oklahoma, and Roger Fouts was there running an ape language program at the University of Oklahoma. There were other cross-fostered chimps, other signing chimps. So in some ways, it was the right place to send him.
Well, he went to Oklahoma accompanied by two of his devoted handlers, Joyce Butler and Bill Tynan. Joyce Butler, he used to ask Joyce Butler to play a game called Pull Tickle, which was his experiences with sex.
Yes.
There's been a lot of interest in sex. One of the early researchers researched female chimp orgasms.
Right.
Because they wanted to understand the similarities with humans?
Well, nobody really knew much about chimpanzees at all, and he studied their maternal instincts. And nobody really assumed that female chimps had orgasms. Only male animals had orgasms is what they thought.
Yeah, well, that's typical of male researchers, isn't it?
Isn't it?
So Nim was now put in with a bunch of chimps.
Yes, which is terrifying.
That must have been a very difficult adjustment for him.
It was a difficult adjustment for him, and it's a difficult adjustment for all of them. I mean, these researchers were sending these chimps to human families, and in about 4 years, they were all bouncing back. And they all were traumatized by being thrown in a cage.
So what was the end of the story? Is Nim still with us?
No. Nim died in the year 2000. He after being sold to a hepatitis study briefly, he ended up in a sanctuary in Texas. He was never injected with hepatitis because there was a large protest over it. He ended up in a sanctuary, and he died in 2000. He dropped dead of a heart attack at the age of 26. Which was very young, but he started off every morning with a cup of coffee, and he loved to smoke cigarettes, and he craved pizza, and he was certainly a pothead in the 70s, so they have our vices.
For a while, it sounded like a wonderful experiment. And in the end, it sounds like a mixed blessing at best.
I think that's accurate. It's not a black and white story. And that's certainly one of the reasons that I chose NIM to write about.
And are people still doing this sort of thing?
In a very different way. No one would exactly take a primate, any kind of ape, and teach it a human language to learn about, you know, the evolution of human language. Now we're much more interested in their languages and how they communicate with each other.
Elizabeth Hess's book, Nim Chimpsky, The Chimp Who Would Be Human, is published by Bantam. I thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.